Welcome to the Kyle Koster Show. My guest today is Daniel Kim. Out of Korea, he operates his own YouTube channel, DKTV. He covers Major League Baseball. You saw him on ESPN's KBO coverage last year. And we're going to talk about the All-Star Game, Shohei Ohtani, and some of the work he's doing to grow the game. Hope you enjoy it. Coming to you in the rarest occasions, I think it's a day after a major event, and we can all agree that Major League Baseball has done something correct. This is a league that takes a beating 364 days a year, but for one day, we can kind of bask in how they did it right, from moving it out of Atlanta, making the right call there, in my opinion, to setting it up. The Home Run Derby was an event unlike it has been in recent years, largely due to Shohei Ohtani, who was not only a starting pitcher for the American League, but led off. And I think that my impressions of the game, it was a fun one. The access was really interesting from Fox. And I kind of paused at one point, and I was just taking count of how many young, exciting stars under the age of 25 were on the field, and how many of them have this big, boisterous personality that so many people have been clamoring for. And maybe we're getting a little bit closer as a baseball community to accepting and elevating and using to grow the game. So what were your thoughts watching last night's game and kind of like the state of baseball right now? Because it does seem like we're kind of at a high point.
Well, definitely a different energy to it. I noticed Home Run Derby was great. We saw Bo Bichette showing up in shorts and a t-shirt. That was definitely a different feel to it. Fernando Tatis showing up in a pink suit. Very fun, very different. Energy was definitely great. Obviously, I'm in Korea, so what I feel, what I see is somewhat limited. But Coors Field looked awesome, and the game was fun. And I think it was a really, really good put-together event by Major League Baseball. The on-field uniforms were still questionable, but overall, as a fan, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think that there was an excitement and an energy and a nod toward the youth movement. And at the forefront of that, we have this transcendent player in Ohtani, who is doing things not so much that Babe Ruth did, because he's doing them better. And I brought him up to my father yesterday, kind of an anecdotal story, who hasn't been following baseball. And I kind of explained the situation to him. I was like, yeah, everybody's saying he's the next Babe Ruth. And his response, which I think was really correct, was, well, what he's doing is far more impressive than Ruth in the age of specialization, and then also the level of competition that he's playing. And, you know, going along with that, he is an international player, and we're drawing the best talent from all around the world. You look at the MVP, the closer, the winning pitcher, all from different countries. So I think it just speaks to, he is by far the most talented player in the world. And we're kind of running out of adjectives and ways to describe what he's doing in real time. And I wonder if it'll be 5 or 6 years down the road for us to truly appreciate, oh my God, what have we just witnessed over this stretch?
Oh, you're completely right. And it seems as though he's someone that we could find in a video game, some cartoon. It doesn't seem real. I remember seeing Shohei Ohtani when he was in high school. He came to Korea and played in one of the tournaments, and he definitely stood out back then. But back then he was in high school, so I wasn't quite sure what kind of future was waiting for him. But for us to see him putting it together at the highest level is really amazing. Just like you mentioned, this isn't, we haven't seen a player like this in more than 100 years. So I am embracing his season. I am really enjoying it. Fans here in Korea, and definitely over in Japan, we're all getting into it. And I think that he's in a league by himself. I think he has a chance to really take Major League Baseball in a global stage to a completely whole new different level. And I think we're just beginning to see the beginning of that process.
Right. And I guess that will kind of go to the other big story that surrounded the All-Star game, which I think was regrettable, but I think largely got to a place that was more constructive than where it began. And that's Stephen A. Smith's comments on Ohtani made on First Take Monday, where he essentially said, it's not good for Major League Baseball that the number one star does not conduct interviews, does not conduct publicity in English, which is the native language here. And he said that that was a detriment because it's going to probably put a governor, I think, on his star. And you saw that response was swift and fairly widespread. There were a lot of people at ESPN who spoke up, either subtweeting him directly at him. I think that the response was very unusual when a type of situation arises like this. And whether it be the internal pressure, the public pressure, whatever it was, Smith kind of changed course. He apologized for what he said. And on the next day, First Take was really good. The first hour was really good, in my opinion, by bringing in alternate voices. June Lee showed up and he was fantastic. Jeff Passan came on and kind of gave context and definitely a more nuanced look at what type of player and person Ohtani is, and also kind of laid out how this idea that Smith, whether he meant to say what he did or whether it came out clumsy, this idea that a player from Asia cannot be baseball's number one star and that they need to assimilate and conduct interviews in English, I think is an old idea. It's been around since foreign players started coming over to the States to play baseball. So I was just kind of curious what your reaction was initially to the comments and how you thought the conversation moved forward to a point where maybe people got more out of it.
Well, I was disappointed and a shock in a way, because I think the way things are happening in the world is definitely different now. I think, you know, we have a, you could make a 15-second video and you could become an influencer, you could become a star. And that's the type of world that we're living in right now. And for Stephen A. Smith to say those words were very disappointing. But I think in a way that this opportunity gave the gives an Asian American community a chance to really speak our minds. And I think I completely agree with what June Lee said on ESPN yesterday, that I think stars come in different shapes. I think they come in from a different background. And I think the sky is the limit for Shohei Ohtani. And to hear those words from Stephen A. Smith, where he actually used the word harmful, I think was very inappropriate. And I was really disappointed. And I think Shohei Ohtani, we're just beginning to see what he can do as a baseball player and also as a face of Major League Baseball. And I think sky's the limit. And for someone to put a limit to what Shohei Ohtani can be in the future, I definitely do not agree with what he said. But having said that, I am excited that, you know, Shohei Ohtani is leading the charge, and I'm expecting big things from him going forward.
Yeah, I wonder if it was particularly hurtful to you personally, because you've done such great work trying to grow the game, both the Major League Baseball game in Korea and Korean baseball over here in the States, and kind of seeing baseball as this universal language. Like, I think that is the best part about it. Like, my relationship in understanding your work started with KBO when Major League Baseball was on hiatus and trying to figure it out last year, and ESPN brought you and a great team over to introduce us to this new style of ball. And to me, that sparked something where I realized I love baseball, even if I don't know the players, and I love this new brand of baseball. It was very fun, and seeing how different cultures play the game, different approaches to the game. I play in a Sunday league that's international, where I'm one of the few English speakers on my team. It's primarily Dominican and Puerto Rican. And that is certainly played in a different way than I grew up playing, which was kind of a constricted, constipated way. And I've learned to lean into the joy of that. So I just wonder if it grows tiresome to have these limitations placed on ideas and movements by people who really haven't done the work and understand the full landscape like you have.
Well, I started working for the Mets back in the late 90s. We had a handful of Korean players at the major league level at that time, those years. And when they first came to the United States and into the major league clubhouses, you know, there were some awkwardness. There were some period of adjustments, but in overall, they were welcomed. There were some few misunderstandings here and there, but overall, I feel that a lot of the Korean players, when they came to the United States, they were welcome. And I think world is changing. I think we're living in a world where different cultures more accepted. Just going backwards, you know, Michael Jordan in his prime years, he was the biggest star in Korea. I don't believe he actually ever came to Korea, but he was the biggest star. He definitely doesn't speak any Korean, but he was still a star. There's something to his, you know, his play, his passion, his talent just doesn't need an interpreter or needs a translator. Same thing can be said for Shohei Ohtani, but it's a different, but it's a reverse order. An Asian player going to United States and becoming a star, taking over the league. And I think that's very natural. I think there is a different ways to communicate, language, talking, being able to do interviews is a one way, but I don't think that's the only way for Shohei Ohtani or any player to connect with the fans and to put a limitation, just like you mentioned. Having an interpreter, I was an interpreter myself with a Major League Baseball club for a long time. Yes, it does pose some sort of a limitation, but I think we live in an age where there are several different ways to communicate and connect with fans. Having an interpreter, I think it's a good thing for Shohei Ohtani right now. But just like I said, this is just the beginning of Shohei Ohtani's career at major league level. You look at someone like Darvish Yu, who doesn't use an interpreter anymore. So maybe we'll get to a point where Shohei is going to feel comfortable. I'm sure he would like to have his friend interpreter help him keep his job. But at the same time, and I think I wouldn't be surprised if Shohei Ohtani ends up not needing an interpreter going forward. So I think I'm not too sure if I'm answering your question, but I think the possibilities are limitless, and I am excited that Shohei Ohtani has what he's been able to accomplish in his short time at the major league level.
I think there's a misconception too when it comes to interpreters. There's many different reasons why a player would choose to use an interpreter outside of they don't know the language. Can you speak to why someone would make that choice and what an interpreter provides in terms of comfort and what kind of benefits and different reasons people would choose to go through an interpreter?
Okay, well, I'll give you an example. I was an interpreter for Jay Seo, who pitched for the Mets, and also Byungyeon Kim, who pitched for several teams. And when it comes to baseball conversations, they understand pretty much everything. They don't really need an interpreter when it comes to talking about baseball strategy. You know, they understand the words. At some time, in meetings that I attended with the players, there were times when I had a hard time understanding all the strategies because these were all baseball player languages, right? Words, phrases. There, I would miss here and there, and I would have to double check with the pitching coach. But by then, they fully understood what was being said and what was being communicated to them. So when it becomes closed doors, when it comes to having baseball conversations, I'm sure it's the same case with Shohei Ohtani as well. They understand not everything, but most of the important information. But when it comes to talking to the media, being on the whether it's ESPN or MLB Network in a live setting, that's a whole new different ball game. You know, you could make mistake, you could pick wrong, you could pick, you know, some words can be misinterpreted in a way. And I think when it comes to media, I think that's when a lot of these Asian players feel a little bit timid or intimidated to be able to conduct that interview without an interpreter. So I think to answer your question, interpreters are needed mostly when it comes to media settings. And unfortunately, that's the only time when fans get to hear from the players. But I think that they all need some time to be able to, I mean, for anyone to be able to be on a live TV, whether it's CNN or ESPN on a national TV, that in itself is extremely, it's not easy. It's, you know, people become nervous, you know, they go stutter. I mean, you could have all kinds of things happening. So I think that just needs a time. But having said that, I think Shohei Ohtani's got a great interpreter on his side. So I think there's nothing wrong with the way things are with Shohei Ohtani, whether it's having an interpreter or whether whether doing any kind of interviews. I think everything's perfect right now for him right now.
And I think we're so myopic and self-centered as Americans largely that we don't appreciate that these players are not only dealing with the American media, they are dealing with a crush of media in their home country. What is it like for a player to juggle those two spheres? Because we might think that the coverage of Ohtani is intense here. I'm sure it's tenfold in Japan. I caught that during the home run derby, they weren't even showing the other batters. They were showing him down in the basement taking BP, which I think is really interesting. And we've seen this from everybody that's come over. How hard is it to juggle the two spheres? And do you find a player ever having trouble balancing which audience to serve?
That's a very interesting question. Let me tell you this. Back in 2019 in Cleveland, I was at the All-Star game. There was a huge truck outside, one by ESPN, the other one by MLB Network, and there was another truck from NHK, which is the rights holder for Major League Games in Japan. So they actually have a huge presence. I wasn't in Colorado yet, yesterday, so I don't know how things were at this year's All-Star game. But back in 2019, Shohei Ohtani wasn't part of the All-Star game, but they had guys like Masahiro Tanaka was an All-Star in 2019. So that's how big of a major league is content-wise here in Asia, in Japan, and in Korea as well. So just like you brought it up, yeah, I mean, Shohei Ohtani is pretty much LeBron James and Michael Jordan combined. Maybe you could say that he's Tiger Woods as well, all three of them combined. So the responsibility and the attention that he gets is, I guess, triple the amount that you would expect from a normal superstar at a major league level. When you do post game interviews, you do a first set of interviews with American writers, and then they have another set of a Zoom call with Japanese writers as well. So it's double the work, double the attention, maybe triple the attention than a normal major league baseball player would get. But that's the responsibility that these players are, you know, that's their responsibility to be able to not only communicate with the fans in the States, but also fans in the back home. So it is what it is. And a lot of them do enjoy it. But I think that it could become a lot of work for them at the same time.
And just to put a bow on what happened with Stephen A. Smith, this is in no way to endorse his comments, but there's an interpretation of what he said, that he was speaking about the inability of the mass American audience to accept a foreign player, to accept a Japanese player as the face of baseball, that you could read that maybe he was saying it's a fan base and it's a viewership who's not ready for that. I'm going to assume that you disagree with that, but if so, do you think that is a change? Was America ready 10 years ago? What do you think the timeline is for the receptiveness for a Japanese player to be the face of Major League Baseball?
Well, I certainly respect other people's opinion just because they have different opinion. I don't think they're necessarily wrong. But at the same time, just like keep mentioning, we're living in a different world. Let me just say that I grew up in New York in the 90s. And those years, listening to Korean music was an embarrassing thing to do. Not that many people enjoy Korean food back then. But right now, we have a group called BTS that's taking over billboards. That's taking over the music industry, and one of the member on BTS speak English. A lot of their songs are in Korean, and yet they're able to relate to the fans in America. They become one of the biggest stars. I know that this is BTS has nothing to do with baseball, but they become one of the top, I guess, bands in the whole world. So, having said that, I understand in some capacity what Stephen A. Smith is trying to say, but I think the language barrier, I think that's somewhat overrated in this age. I think it's something that's easily can be overcome with just a sheer talent, what you do on the field as a baseball player. And I think that's more stronger than what you could be able to say in front of a camera or a microphone. And I think Shohei Ohtani is just proving that right now. So I think I understand what Stephen A. Smith was trying to say, but I think to put a limit on someone like Shohei Ohtani is not really the, I guess, the right thing to do. I'm not too sure exactly how I could phrase it, but yeah, I mean, that's how I'm looking at it right now.
Let's take a break to hear from our sponsors. Summer is coming. Are you ready to unveil that beach bod? You're in luck because our friends at Manscaped just launched their fourth generation performance package, which includes the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, the 4.0. Compliment your summer bod with a trim from the leaders in male grooming. The sun is shining and calling your name, fellas. So join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get ready for hot guy summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off, plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. That's FANSIDED20. This fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to an advanced skin safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 has 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch, which can engage a travel lock, and the ability to turn the 4,000 LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. Escape the shrubs and weeds this summer and shine with Manscaped. So Daniel, one of the things that I admire is I think you are such an impressive self-starter. I have so much respect for what you've built by yourself, being an independent journalist and, you know, amassing this following. What has been your biggest thrill in the Major League Baseball arena? I know that you had some trouble getting access to games earlier this year, but how are you continuing to do the work that you do from over there?
Well, I'm just giving everything I've got when it comes to creating content, when it comes to creating baseball content. You got to keep in mind that most of the Major League Baseball fans in Korea don't get to go to the United States and actually attend a single Major League Baseball game. So I'm trying to create a content for the fans here in Korea to be able to get them closer to Major League Baseball. So that's what I've been doing for the last, I guess, 5-6 years. I've worked with the rights holders, networks here in Korea, but I felt as though I could do a lot more just working by myself. And I've decided not to work with the network. Just decided to start my own media company. I guess following guys like John Boy Media or Cespedes Barbecue kind of inspired me to just go out there and just, I guess, hustle in a way. And that's what I've been doing. My content here, my Major League Baseball content in Korea gets the most views. It's the biggest channel on YouTube and also another platform called Naver TV. So I'm really proud of the work that I've done. But my job is to not to be an expert, not to become an analyst when it comes to Major League Baseball. I just want to bridge the gap between Major League Baseball and baseball fans in Korea that most likely will not get to go to attend a single baseball game in the United States. So that's what's been my focus. And it's been rewarding. I'm getting a lot of good response from the fans, good feedback. Fans, they are happy with the work that I've been doing. So that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years.
It must be exciting to, as you're growing an audience, I think that the acumen for the game probably increases. So have you seen kind of an increase in nuance or whatever of the way the game is discussed? Is it fun to watch your fans learn more and more about the Major League Baseball game? Maybe like this organization is notoriously cheap, all the little things that you would have to, kind of observe for a few years and dig below the surface of the highlights to find out what's it been like having, kind of like more tributaries of conversation to have with your fans as the years go on?
Well, the viewers and the fans dictate the teams and the players that I cover or talk about. I would have to say that just about 4 or 5 years ago, the fans here were only interested in Korean players like Shin-Soo Choo or Hyunjin Ryu, but that's changed. If I talk about Fernando Tatis Jr., I get a ton of views. The response is great. If I talk about Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I get a lot of views. If I start talking about Spider Tech or Pine Tar usage by, Gerrit Cole possibly, or talk about Trevor Bauer, I'm getting a lot of good response as well. Good feedback from the fans as well. So I think the game itself, Major League Baseball is growing a little bit. Three, four, five years ago, it was mostly about Korean players and what they were doing at the Major League level. But I think the interest in Major League Baseball is expanding. You don't necessarily have to talk about Hyunjin Ryu all the time. You don't have to talk about Ha Sung Kim all the time. You talk about Trevor Bauer, Gerrit Cole. You talk about Bobby Shedd. You talk about Freddie Freeman. I'm still getting the same type of response from the fans. So I think that's very promising. You just cannot rely on just one or a couple of Korean players. But I think that over the last 3 or 4 years, the interest level is changing. Not only is it getting bigger, but I think that fans here are beginning to see a bigger following the league in a different way than they were like 5 years ago.
This is a very, forgive the term, inside baseball question, but right. I'm fascinated by your schedule because of the time difference. How do you negotiate getting sleep and finding some sense of normal circadian rhythm when games are on at the witching hour or in the middle of the night over there? How do you set up your day? I've always been curious about that.
Well, I've got my routine. The 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is 8 a.m. here in Korea. So my morning starts around 7 a.m. That's when I get ready and watch games on the East Coast. And then 11 p.m. would be the 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So that's when I could watch West Coast games. And then I take a few hours off And then I get ready for KBO games around 5 p.m. my time. So I've got the morning time for Major League Baseball, evening time for Korean KBO League Baseball. So it's pretty much packed. But don't feel bad for me. We're talking about baseball here. I'm not complaining. I enjoy watching baseball. I enjoy creating content for baseball. It is a lot of work, a lot of talking, a lot of editing, a lot of shooting. But baseball is something that I love. That's probably the reason why I'm able to continue on without feeling fatigued or getting sick of it. I grew up as a baseball fan, and I'm just grateful that I could actually make a living out of baseball doing something that I love, following something that I love. And that's been the story of my life, pretty much.
I think we all remember from seeing your shots during KBO broadcasts, and I'm looking at it right now. You have an impressive room of memorabilia there. I was curious, what are some of your most special pieces that you have?
Let's see. I've got some bobbleheads, but I've got some dirt from Shea Stadium. I grew up in New York. I only lived a couple of miles away from Shea Stadium in Flushing. Shea Stadium doesn't exist anymore, but I've got some dirt. I worked for the Mets starting from 1998 through 2005. So those were a lot of years. Basically my 20s and early 30s were spent in Flushing, New York. So I've got some dirt. I've got some jerseys, but I think if you were to ask me, the one that I cherish the most has to be the dirt from Shea Stadium, which not a lot of people have.
What is that in what is that in, like, a jar? How do you maintain that?
Let me show it to you. Hold on a second.
All right. Well, doing visual on a podcast, always dangerous, always dangerous. He has a bottle. There's about 2 inches of dirt in it. Yep. Oh, wow. That's how I call it. Is that from the mound?
Yeah, it's from the mound.
Wow, look at me. Able to identify dirt by what part of the ball field it came from. I'm feeling very proud of myself.
That's most people don't know that, but yeah, you picked it up right away.
So in your time there, I have to say, I might be the only person in the world whose favorite baseball player is Rey Ordóñez still. In my mind, the best defensive shortstop in terms of flashy plays I've ever seen, maybe not the consistency of an Omar Vizquel. And certainly there was, we don't want to talk about the hitting issue. It wasn't very good. That's why he kind of topped out at about a 238 career hitter or whatever it was. But I just was curious, what was it like to see those plays live? Because I can't imagine, and I cannot recall another shortstop who was as creative. Maybe Jose Iglesias is the closest second coming, but what was it like to be able to see Ordóñez make those plays live?
Well, I remember arguing with my friends in New York. A lot of them were Yankee fans, and we would argue constantly about who's better, Derek Jeter or Rey Ordóñez. And being a Mets fan, I would, trying to make an argument that Rey Ordóñez was more valuable than Derek Jeter. It was those Mets teams were very special defensively. Remember, Edgardo Alfonso was the second base, Robin Ventura was the third base, and we had John Allroot. At some point, I remember Sports Illustrated deemed them as the greatest infield ever. Mets team back then, yeah, we did have Mike Piazza, but it wasn't much of an offensive team. The defense was something that, we felt really good about the team. So, some of the plays that he made, he wasn't a big guy, remember? He was not that big, but he had a great arm. He had some amazing footwork. And till this day, I would have to say he's the best defensive shortstop the Mets ever had. I know that they have Francisco Lindor right now, but defensive-wise, I think he is the best Mets defensive shortstop. So funny you mentioned him. Just going back to the 90s, I would have some fierce arguments with my friends trying to make a case that he's better than Derek Jeter, but I didn't always win that argument, but yeah, I had fun arguing.
Yeah, I have to be really careful there, as Derek Jeter is technically a coworker. You know, we love you, Jeets, Kalamazoo, Michigan, right down the road. But you know, you did not have the range that Ray had. Daniel, where can people find your work?
Right now, you can find on YouTube, but a lot of my YouTube work is in Korean. So I don't know if your Korean is not, maybe you might want to hire an interpreter to be able to watch my YouTube, but you could look up DKTB on YouTube, or you could always follow me on Twitter, Daniel Kim W at Twitter. And I'm also trying to put together a KBO YouTube channel in English, so that I could stay connected with the fans in the States. ESPN decided not to carry KBO this year, but I'm trying to stay connected with all the fans all over the world about KBO.
All right. Thank you, Daniel, for your time. Really appreciate it. And go Wiz.
Thank you. Thank you, Kyle. Let's go Mets.